just for you, sir, on your computer. It's not about the future, but it's all the way from Utah. No matter where you're from, you can download This Week in Mormons. Join Jeff and Al and round up your pals to bring a jealous salad as you listen to my ballad. I promise you won't get bored as they talk more and 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 more about Mormons.
Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to This Week in Mormons, Twin Sisters Edition. We're your hosts, Ariane Smith
and Tiffany Hales.
And we're back. It's been a few weeks. We had conference.
Yes, we did.
Jeff and Al did a great conference recap podcast last week. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, go check it out.
Yes, they did a wonderful job recapping all of the speakers from conference.
Yes, and our big news this week here in Idaho.
Da, 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 da.
We cannot contain our excitement about this.
Oh no, we cannot.
We've been begging and pleading for a soda and cookie shop, and we have one.
Yes, on Saturday, Sodalicious, the Utah-based specialty soda shop and cookie shop, opened a location here in Eagle, Idaho. So we are super excited. They are also opening two more locations up here in Idaho.
I think three. I think
is it three more?
They're going to have four total in okay. the Boise metro area, which is like, bam, they're just taking us by storm.
I know. So they're opening one in Meridian.
One in Nampa.
And one in Nampa.
And then there's another one in Boise somewhere, but I haven't figured out where yet.
Okay. So the first one was their one in Eagle, which is probably about equal distance from both our homes. It's probably about 5 miles from Ariane's house and about 5 miles from my house. And so Saturday was the grand opening. They were offering free 24-ounce sodas to every customer who came in. Yes. So as you can imagine, when the word free is thrown around and sugar is available, Mormons love that.
Oh my goodness. It was funny. I didn't see anybody I knew there, but you, and you brought your teenage daughter.
I brought my teenage daughter.
Like half your steak was there. You were just like, hey.
We so could have held steak conference.
you knew everybody in there.
Yeah, it was really true. I knew a lot of people in there.
So, but it was fun and delicious. We love those cookies.
Yes, we do. And so we took pictures of us at the grand opening. So if you want to see the pictures of us at the grand opening, go over to our Twin Sisters Instagram account. And we posted them there. And it was a really fun event.
It was fun. And now we have definitely earned our title of Provo Light.
It's so true.
Like, this is official. We are Provo Light.
We are Provo Light. We have our Sodalicious.
So, okay, the other thing that we decided that I wanted to share today was 2 weeks ago, I think it was just before conference, our stake had a Stake Relief Society meeting with a speaker, and it was a speaker I was a little bit starstruck about.
Oh my. Okay, do tell.
So there are two like Mormon mom food blogs that I've followed for years, and both of them happen to live here in the Valley, in the Boise area. So one of them, who is on the blog Our Best Bites, her name is Sarah Wells. She is actually in my stake. And so she was the speaker at the Stake Relief Society meeting. And I've followed her for years on Instagram and read her blog. And I kind of feel like I know her. I know that sounds creepy. But she was so good. Such a good speaker. Like,
okay, so what did she talk on at the Stake Relief Society meeting?
Well, the meeting, the theme was kind of feeding your family in the chaos. Our Relief Society has had this whole theme this year of trying to be better about getting your families together for family meals. So her talking was just ideas to cut through some of the chaos to make feeding your family easier. She was a riot. She was so funny, a little bit irreverent, hilarious. I loved it. It was so good.
So did you pick up some good ideas?
Yeah. Lots of, you know, she had some shortcut ideas of how to shortcut. And I think a lot of it was, you know, just feel good about what you're doing. If you're doing something, making some kind of effort, you're good.
Like, oh, so kind of like reading the scriptures. If your family is at least making some sort of an effort, be proud of the effort that you're making and make a goal to do more.
Yeah. Like she was saying that right now in her family, it's too chaotic to do a family meal together because kids and sports. So they do family toast every night before bed for like a snack. before bed. So they sit down and they all have their, you know, evening snack of toast with butter before bed. And that is what they can do in their lives right now. I was like, that is so smart.
Like, oh, I like that idea.
Because they're never all going to be together for an actual meal, but they have their snack together at night. So, you know.
Okay, now I think you have to share with the viewer, with the listeners here, your fandemonium.
Okay, this is
of Sarah Wells.
This is a little bit embarrassing. This is another true confession, which we did one last month when we admitted we liked the Housewives, but you said I need to share.
So you have to share. This is too good. You cannot.
Okay. So when we first moved here, I knew she lived in the Boise area because she posts about it all the time on her Instagram. And I thought, oh, it'd be so fun if I ran into her at Target. And I didn't run into her at Target. But one day I was at Target and I thought I saw somebody I knew from high school whose name was Sarah. And I saw her from across the way. And I thought, oh, I wonder if she's in my stake. If that's her, she must live close. So I got onto my stake directory online and I typed in the name Sarah looking for this girl from high school. And Sarah Wells came up, the blogger, and I was like, oh, she's in my stake.
So there's nothing like the stake directory.
Oh, I know. Okay. It was total stake directory stalking. Kind of weird, kind of creepy. Anyways, one of my friends from Oregon was visiting last spring, and she is also a huge fan of this website, Our Best Bites. And so I was telling her this, and she said, well, let's drive by her house.
No way, you did a drive-by?
We did a drive-by. I know, it's so creepy. It's a little embarrassing. But so there's one other food blogger that I love that is not in my stake. Her name is Mel from Mel's Kitchen Cafe, but she also lives in the Valley, and I'm also waiting to run into her at Target. But I won't be stalking her because she's not my stake, so I don't have her address.
Oh, darn it. So, Sarah, if you listen to our podcast, my sister is a super fan to the point that she stalked you.
All right, let's move on now.
Okay, so we need to talk about the Meridian Temple because the open house begins here in about the next, does it begin on the 14th?
No, I think it's 21st.
21st.
So another week, another 2 weeks.
Another 2 weeks or so.
But they've started the VIP tours.
Yes. So needless to say, we are in the thick right now of all things Meridian Temple and associated with the youth cultural celebration. So we had talked about in the past that we were like, Boise has a culture. What is this cultural celebration going to be like?
We're figuring this out.
We're figuring it out, but we're not going to share any details of what their theme is and how they're going to do it. We're going to wait, and we will do a review on the cultural celebration after it actually occurs. But I have teenagers who are involved in the cultural celebration, and one of the things that our stake has been assigned is the girls in our stake who are dancing are part of a river. And so as part of a river, they have to have a blue costume. And their blue costume consists of this dress. And the dress is made out of a knit fabric, kind of like a swimsuit fabric. Right. Well, it's combined my stake and the star stake, which is just like an enormous amount of girls. They probably have 700 girls at least who are dancing. Some of the girls are in the choir, but they have, I mean, the two stakes are just enormous.
Wow, that's a ton.
It's a ton. I think that this is like maybe the closing part of the cultural celebration. Anyway, so apparently, unbeknownst to me, they have some sort of a clearinghouse for costumes from prior youth cultural celebrations. So you're hosting a cultural celebration, you go to the clearinghouse.
Oh, is that where they're getting them from?
Well, that's not where they're getting my costumes from because the costumes for our stake, because there's so many girls, you know, they don't have 700-800 blue dresses lying around.
Right.
So that means we are making 700-800 blue dresses. And so every ward is responsible
for a certain number?
For a certain number. Okay. So, for example, in my ward, there's 25 girls who are dancing, and so we are responsible for 25 dresses. And so because I sew, I said, yes, I will help sew. And so it was really fun over conference weekend. I had several other sisters come over, and we set up the serger, and we were pumping out dresses right and left. And we kind of thought, this is like a modern-day sewing bee. I can't remember if it was the Kirtland Temple or the Nauvoo Temple where the sisters got together and they were sewing clothes for the workers.
Oh.
Same thing. We're sewing dresses for the cultural celebration.
Well, there you go. Bonding over sewing.
Bonding over sewing. So
one thing that has just really surprised me, I've never lived anywhere where a new temple opened, the amount of details.
Oh, yes.
And assignments and jobs. And I mean, it's a huge, I don't know who's running the whole thing, but there's so many little aspects. You have the buses to deal with. You have the invitations. We're getting new assignments every week in our wards for manning the parking lot and going and cleaning every day. And what else? Security. They're looking for security.
Ushers. They need ushers.
Tour guides.
Well, and I have to tell you, having lived through the rededication of the Boise Temple, which was several years ago, and then the Meridian Temple, I just assumed Meridian would be similar to the rededication for Boise. This is on a whole nother level, folks.
Oh, is it a lot more?
It's so much more.
You guys still did the cultural celebration.
Oh, yes, we still did the cultural celebration.
But they didn't shuttle people in for Boise, right?
Well,
didn't they have enough on-site parking?
No, they didn't have enough on-site parking, but just the demands for the personnel to help for the Meridian Temple are nothing like the Boise Temple. I was discussing this with Keith, your husband, and this is the analogy he gave I liked. He said, well, you know, the Boise Temple was kind of like getting your car detailed. The Meridian Temple, it's like buying a whole new car. And that really is what
That's
it's like.
True. That makes sense.
It really is an all hands on deck. I mean, the days that our ward is assigned to help at the temple, whether it's tour guide or usher or parking, we are really having to have everybody there from the ward almost between the youth and the adults just to cover the shifts. So it's an incredible opportunity. And one that I know we'll look back on quite fondly, but if you've never been or lived in a temple district during a new temple, it's a lot. So
all good things,
all good things. So in fact, my husband and I are going to be tour guides. Now you and Keith were going to be tour guides, but that kind of fizzled out.
We were going to do it. We may be tour guide dropouts at this point in time. We went to the training thinking.
Slackers.
I know. We went to the training thinking they probably only wanted us for one shift. We sat through the training and then at the end they said, we need you to cover three shifts. And each shift is about 5 hours at least, 5 to 6 hours. And so we got a little nervous and said, okay, we'll make it work. You know, we have small kids, but we'll figure it out. So anyway, things happened. One of the shifts was on a weekday, and we just decided we can't on a weekday with school drop-off pickup. So we dropped out of that shift. The second shift they gave us was on a Saturday, and then we found out one of our daughters has a piano festival that's like an all-day thing, so we had to drop that shift. So our third and final shift, we just found out this week, our steak has steak. It's also a Saturday. Our steak has steak conference that weekend, and it's the same weekend as our Saturday session of conference.
Oh,
so our steak has given away that shift. So our three shifts are now down to zero. So we're no longer tour guides, but we got to go on the lovely tour for the tour guides.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, Darren and I are still tour guides. We will be tour guiding on October 21st, which is a Saturday, and I believe November 4th, which is a Saturday. And yes, they had training for the tour guides, which included a tour of the temple. And I have to share with you about my experience of the tour of the temple. This was kind of funny. So our stake was supposed to show up at 4 o'clock. So I showed up at 4 o'clock. Darren wasn't quite finished with work, and so he didn't make it. Uh-huh. And so I went through the tour and it was lovely and everything. And they weren't checking your stake identifications or anything. So I went home and I told Darren, I said, get in the shower. We're going over there. You need to go through the temple. Right. They're doing tours the rest of the night. So we go back over there and get in a tour group. And it was a very different experience that time around. We had,
really?
so this is a, now mind you, this is a tour for the tour guides.
Right. We did the tour for the tour guides.
The tour for the tour guides. So they're teaching.
Crowded.
Yes.
Ours was packed.
Packed. So they're teaching the tour guides how to tour.
Right.
So we have tour guide Barb, and tour guide Barb, tour guide Barb didn't read the section in the little card that says, be flexible.
Uh-oh. You've got a stingy tour guide?
So first thing happened is we walked out of the chapel. Uh-huh. And the people ahead of us kind of walked into the parking lot, didn't stay on the sidewalk. Oh, tour guide Barb was not happy about that. She kept yelling up, get on the sidewalk, get on the sidewalk, get off of the parking lot, get on the sidewalk.
Oh,
now,
dear.
Now, granted, there were no cars coming in at the time. So then she yelled out the city that they were from and said, come on, you know better, get on the sidewalk.
Oh, my.
So we stayed on the sidewalk. And then we get up to the front of the temple, and you're supposed to go to the left to get your booties on. Well, uh-huh. Some people went to the right. Oh, no, 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 no. There'll be no going to the right for booties.
Oh, no.
So then we get inside the temple. We go down to the baptistry. Some people, when we got down to the bottom of the stairs at the baptistry, you know, went ahead and went into the chapel associated with the baptistry. And,
right.
Oh, no, no, we are supposed to wait at the bottom of the stairs. And the people in my group said, well, the usher told us to come in here.
Oh, dear. Ushers and tour guides at odds.
Ushers and tour guides at odds. So it really didn't get better through the tour. It was kind of funny.
Oh, no.
All throughout the tour, if anybody asked questions, she said, well, you just need to remind people on your tour that if they ask questions, you say, all questions will be answered at the end. Because at the end, then the sisters are there to answer questions.
Right.
And so anyway, it was quite the experience. I was like, oh, yeah, you missed that section that says be flexible in the tour guide instructions.
Oh, dear.
So at least now I know how not to behave.
That's
as a tour
right.
guide.
Maybe she'll retire before the general public.
But you know what? One thing that I will say this, because I did not know this and I did not learn this on my first tour through, that the temple has a theme. And apparently most temples have a theme. And the theme of the Meridian Temple is the law of the harvest.
Yes. They told us that too, and that there's different flowers and...
Exactly.
And... Native Idaho
exactly. So
things incorporated.
If you're going to be in the area, get online, get your tickets. It's a beautiful building.
Yeah.
It's enormous. Boise is a very small temple. This temple, everything is just twice the size, if not bigger, than Boise. Mm-hmm. So we just encourage anybody out there who's close enough to come take advantage and tour the temple.
Yep, go check it out.
All
okay.
right. Shall we move on to stories in the news
yes,
now?
Let's do our news stories for the week. So I think you're going to take the first one.
I am. I'm going to start with the funeral of Elder Robert D. Hales. As many of you know, he passed away between the Sunday morning session and the Sunday afternoon session. And so his funeral was held last Friday. Now, as you know, my last name is Hales, and that is Ariane's maiden name. Hales is our birth name. And so, you know,
we get asked all the time. I've gotten asked several times. Have you?
We get asked frequently, are you related to Robert D? And the answer to that question is, of course, yes, but not directly.
Very, very distant.
Very, very distant. It is six generations back that we share a common grandfather and common grandmother. And after that, it branches out. So.
Right.
Yes, there is a relation, but it's far back in time.
Not enough to get us conference tickets.
No, not enough to get us conference tickets. All right. So at his funeral, several of the general authorities spoke at his funeral. President Nelson spoke, and he gave a great talk. And one of the things he said is Elder Hales' deepest desire was to cherish and care for Mary, his wife. And then he shared a story about... he says, when faced with the risk of losing a master's degree and taking the calling of elders quorum president for his ward, Mary demonstrated her faith alongside her husband's in the Lord, saying, I'd rather have an active priesthood holder than a man who holds a master's degree from Harvard.
Wow.
So, you know, I was really curious. What's out there on Mary Crandall Hales, his wife?
I know you don't ever hear much about the wives.
Yeah, and some of the wives, I mean, the men are amazing. Don't mm-hmm. get me wrong. I'm a big fan of the members of the Quorum of the Twelve and the First Presidency, but their wives very much intrigue me.
Yeah.
Because I just think you've got to be a really special and unique person to have a husband that has that kind of a calling.
Right.
That is so very public and so very 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these, it's interesting because some of these women clearly feel a lot more comfortable being in the public, and they are willing to do interviews and be more out there.
Right.
Some of the sisters are not. It's not their comfort level. This is
right.
I don't want to say it's not their calling, because I think, you know, anytime you're going to accept a calling to be an apostle of the Lord, this is a joint calling with your wife.
Yeah.
To a larger, it's a package deal. And Mary Crandall Hales was not one who chose to be very vocal. So I had a hard time finding too many details about her. She did agree to an interview with the Deseret News after he was first called to the Quorum of the Twelve, I believe in 1994. Hmm. And she told a couple stories there where when they first got married, he was in business and they were moving around a lot. And he told her, he said, look, I'm not going to be able to help you sell the car, pack the house, sell the car,
right,
et cetera. You're going to kind of be on your own for that. But he said, I know you can do it. I have faith in you. And so she talked about how she had to learn to do these things. Hmm. And clearly from her answer that she gave him when he was asked to be Elders Quorum president while in school at Harvard, where she said, I'd rather have an active priesthood holder than a man who holds a degree from Harvard. I think that alone right there says a lot about him. But finally, I just want to touch on one really interesting story that was shared. And it was a near-death experience that apparently Elder Hales had that was witnessed by President Eyring. And President Eyring says, I was called to the hospital on a summer afternoon with information he would be coming in on an ambulance. So what had happened is Elder Hales had been out playing golf and been enjoying himself, and he hadn't felt really well. And his golf partner said, well, you know, let's take you to the hospital. And he said, no, I want to play golf. Well, the situation didn't get much better, and he finally ended up in an ambulance on the way to the hospital. So President Eyring is called, and Mary is called, and so they are standing there when Elder Hales is brought in, and President Eyring says, I stood with her while they took him, apparently unconscious, to an adjoining room. The doctor came out to say that he feared the worst. I could see through the doorway that medical personnel were attempting to save him. After some time, the doctor came out to ask me to come see Elder Hales. He was lying there on his back. He opened his eyes wide, reached out to take my hand, gripped it hard, and said, they made me come back.
Wow.
And Elder Eyring continues on. President Eyring says, later he told me that he retained no memory of that moment. And so Elder Eyring says, I don't know if he was deceased for a brief period of time that afternoon or if it was a dream, but I do know this. He felt in the moment of intense testing that he was supposed to do something difficult, and he was loyal to the command he received. And I just thought, what an interesting story, because a lot of people who do have these near-death experiences, they remember them and they're able to tell them, but it's pretty clear that he had received, you know, something that said, you got to go back.
Right.
That his work wasn't done.
Wow. Interesting. So, and then he couldn't remember. I'd be so mad if I couldn't remember.
I know, I'd be so mad too. But anyway, all right. Next story in the news.
All right. Our next story is, this is a fun one. This was by the Standard Examiner. And it is all about the food that Mormons like.
Oh, yes. We Mormons like our food.
It was called Utah Gastronomy Runs the Gamut. Fry sauce, flavored soda, tart cherries.
Oh.
So these are a few of the foods that this study found people in Utah like. So it says Georgia has its peaches, Maine has its lobsters, Utah, meanwhile, has its fry sauce. So a lot of this article was dedicated to the fry sauce.
And there is no shame in that, because let's face it, fry sauce is divine.
I got to say, I love fry sauce.
I do too.
Now, growing up in Idaho, I feel like we had it a lot, but not at every restaurant. Really,
no.
I only remember Arctic Circle serving it as a kid.
Yes.
And which is interesting, because this article says it did originate at Arctic Circle,
which is a Utah company.
And I never even knew that Arctic Circle was a Utah thing.
Yes.
But it has spread throughout Utah, and now, of course, many, many Utah restaurants offer fry sauce.
Yes.
So this article also talked about some of the other Utah standards, which funeral potatoes.
Oh, I love myself a good funeral potato.
I do too. and green Jell-O. Now, I have issue with the green Jell-O.
Oh, I so have issue with the green Jell-O.
I think that the green Jell-O stereotype of Utah is outdated. Don't you think? I mean, is this really still happening at modern day potlucks in Utah? I don't know. You lived there.
I don't know, because my issue with green Jell-O is I think it's disgusting. So even if it was at a modern day potluck, I would just walk on by and ignore it. And especially when you put things like carrots in with your green Jell-O, that so violates the rules.
I agree.
You do not mix sugar with vegetables or meats or anything like that.
I feel like this is an outdated stereotype. I feel like it's not happening that much anymore. But I could be wrong, because I do have to say that moving back to Idaho, I have noticed a difference in the Relief Society potluck.
Oh, really?
Versus when I lived in California or Oregon.
Okay, so tell me the difference you noticed.
Here's the difference. I've been to maybe like two Relief Society potlucks since I moved back, where it says bring a salad.
Okay.
So when I lived in Oregon and Utah, when it's a Relief Society potluck.
You mean Oregon and California?
Oregon and California, yes. I can't even keep track of where I've lived.
Okay.
So when I lived on the West Coast, when it says bring a salad to Relief Society thing, people bring green salads and what my husband calls girly salads. Now, he calls a girly salad any salad that has like spinach or fruit or feta cheese and a vinaigrette dressing.
Or caramel nuts.
Yes, candied nuts. He calls that a girly salad. So those were
staples.
Those were staples. Now, I did notice moving back here, when it's a bring a salad, you do get a lot more pasta salads.
Really?
But fruity pasta salads with marshmallows and stuff.
Oh, no. That violates the food rules.
There's also some green salads. And then there's like taco pasta. Like there's just all kinds of, there's some green salads, some pasta salads, but not so many girly salads.
Really? Okay, that's very interesting.
So I'm really curious about this. I really want like a study to be done.
Okay. Well, maybe we can request our Utah listeners to get on the Facebook page and tell us when this episode is released. Is Jell-O, green Jell-O salad in Utah an outdated food?
Are they still serving green Jell-O salad? Are they serving pasta salads with marshmallows in them there?
Yeah.
I'm noticing some of that here.
No. You don't mix the sweets with the other things that aren't sweet. It's wrong.
Yeah. So this article also talks about, speaking of sweets, just how popular sugar is in Utah.
Oh, yes.
And I love this quote. They interviewed one restaurant owner, and he said that his dad used to say, "We don't have a liquor license, we have a sugar license." When it was suggested that maybe they should sell liquor in their restaurant, he said, "No, we're going to start with the sweets."
Because there is no provision in the Word of Wisdom against sugar.
That's right.
Alcohol, other strong drinks, maybe yes. Sugar, not so much.
That's right. Which again leads us back to our beloved So Delicious.
Exactly. And why it is so popular. And I think they even reference in the article in talking about some of those soda shops that they are essentially...
It's like the Starbucks.
The Starbucks of Utah.
Yeah.
Which again begs the question, the difference between the Mormons and the non-Mormons, the temperature of their caffeine.
Very true. It also mentions in this article that although the Beehive State has a reputation for the funeral potatoes and the green Jell-O, they said... You know, they think this could be standard amongst other churches too.
They do.
That would be an interesting study. I bet they see a lot of that with other churches.
I know.
Don't you think at potlucks?
I'm sure they do. This would be an interesting study for maybe somebody who's like getting a PhD in religion or something.
Yes.
A correlation study of food and potlucks and religion. That would just be so fascinating.
Let's look at the church potluck across like a broad spectrum of religions.
What do the Baptists bring?
Yes.
What do the Catholics bring?
That is good information.
What do the Mormons bring?
Somebody do this, please.
I know. Maybe the Jews. Ooh, I wonder what a Jewish potluck would be like.
I know.
It would be so great. This would be so great. All right, moving on. The next one is... story is about a Utah, I don't know if she's from Utah, but she is an LDS mom who three of her children, and I think she has six, six kids, but I think the first three have all received perfect ACT scores. And so everybody wants to know, what is your secret? How is it that your children receive these perfect ACT scores?
Well, you have to say the title of this article. Wasn't it called How to Help Your Kid?
Yes.
Get a how I helped my kids. Something about how to help your kid get a perfect ACT score. Which I have to say, when I read the title of this article, it totally turned me off. I was like, oh.
Yeah, because, you know, you think, oh, Tiger Mom.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of that book, but that book that was out a couple years ago that talks about the Tiger Mom.
Yes.
And is this lady a Tiger Mom?
But reading the article, she was okay.
Interestingly enough, she is not a Tiger Mom. She's all kind of about balance, which I like. So she compiles this list, and she divides this list into two categories. She has kind of long-term ideas for parents of kids of all ages, and then she also has some short-term ideas for, you know, right before they take the test. So we're just going to go through a couple her list and talk about her things. So on her long-term list, the first thing on her long-term list is cultivate kindness. And I really liked that because that is one thing that I always push with my kids. There's a lot, and you have this because you have all girls and I've got girls too. Mm-hmm. Girls have drama. And they can be so brutally mean to each other, not in a physical way, but in a very emotional way. And so I always tell my girls, I say, look, I will tolerate a lot of stuff, but if I find out that you are acting like a mean girl or being a mean girl, I will cut you like bad bangs. It is simply not acceptable. The standard in my house for my girls is I say, I expect you to be kind, I expect you to be nice, and I expect you to be friendly to everyone.
Right.
And just treat people that way. So I really like that she talked about cultivate kindness. Mm-hmm. Then she talks about become buddies with Saul Kahn. And I'm sure most of you have heard of Khan Academy. It's a math academy. I've gotten on with a couple of my kids and done Khan Academy.
Right. I know. I thought this part was interesting. I've never been on there, but it says it has it for all ages. My kids are younger, so I've never thought to go check it out. But after reading your article, I'm thinking, well, I'll go get on there. That would, you know, it can be get some good extra help for my little ones. So.
Exactly. And they do a really good job, in my opinion, of explaining how they're getting to the answers. And it is geared towards kids, and the kids like it. The next one is learn to juggle or ride a unicycle or learn card tricks, solve a Rubik's Cube. And what she talks about is she talks about the confidence kids get from learning new skills and being able to realize, look, I can do anything, helps them with those problem-solving skills. Then she says, take hard classes. And so she encourages her kids, don't just sign up for easy classes to protect your GPA. Mm-hmm. Take hard classes. Take demanding classes. And I think that's really true because I think those demanding classes prepare you for the standardized tests and challenge kids. And so I've made my teenagers sign up for concurrent college credit classes. Well, I shouldn't say I made them. I've highly encouraged them to sign up for concurrent college level classes as well as AP classes. She talks about buy books, that having books available in your house is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Binge on YouTube videos. And she talks about, you know, TED Talks on YouTube videos, extra history, minute physics, that there's all sorts of fun things like that. Then she says, subscribe to a newspaper, that there's something about physically turning the pages of a newspaper, which is funny because I used to be a daily newspaper reader, and now I read all my news online, and I don't subscribe, but I know your husband does.
I do mostly online, but my husband is an avid, he wants that paper in his hand. And sometimes I'll sit down and grab it, and it is nice.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I kind of miss that. Yeah.
She talks about choose good schools. She says, make good use of your time. She also says, have your kids work out, that fit kids are smarter kids. And she also says, play an instrument, learn a language, which again, studies have shown that if you're playing an instrument or learning your language, it's helping to rewire your brain. So those are her long-term ones. Right. Now let's talk about her short-term ones, because my two older girls both took the ACT last year.
Right.
They want to take it again because they'd like to improve their scores. And so one of her suggestions is, she says, throw money at your kids. Now, that may seem counterintuitive, but there's a lot of courses out there that will help you study and prep for the ACT. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, some kids will do well in those courses. Other kids will just ignore those courses and it's money wasted.
Right.
She suggests, you know, buy the books for your kids and say, hey, you know, you study these books and study these tests and I'll give you the money that I would have paid for a course.
I thought that was so interesting.
I did too.
I am not above a bribe.
Exactly. And then she says, take, then retake. And so she talks about only one of her kids got a perfect score the first time around. The other two, it took them, I think, two or three tries to get the perfect score. And that was my advice when I was talking to my girls, as I said, look, I've done enough standardized tests between the LSAT and the bar exam and the ACT and all of those. The one thing that I noticed is I just did practice tests out the yin yang,
right,
so that I understood how they thought. And when I understood their thought process, it made the test much easier. She says, make sleep a priority. She feeds her kids fish and leafy greens and berries and walnuts prior to the test. And then she says, pray. So All really great advice. And like I said, I appreciated that she seemed very balanced in her approach and not a tiger mom.
Yeah, she did seem balanced, although some of this has got to be just her kids' natural, like,
I would definitely concur with that.
Clearly her children are driven to succeed.
Exactly. Her children are driven and they are very smart.
So you have teenagers. And I remember when one of your girls took the ACT this summer, she was talking to me about it and how high some of these scores are that some of the kids are getting, especially kids that are trying to get into BYU.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you feel this from them? Is there just a pressure to get this score up?
Well, you know, for me, none of my kids aspire to go to BYU, which it's kind of ironic. I mean, I'm a BYU grad, but that is just not where they aspire to go to school at.
So they don't have that pressure.
So they're not feeling that pressure. Yeah, exactly. To get into BYU. They have other schools that they're interested in, which is fine. And I fully support that. But yes, and they go to very good schools where they are receiving a very good education, which I'm very fortunate for. And they go to schools with kids who are getting very good grades and good scores on the ACT.
Right.
Because in part, a lot because of these reasons that the mom said. They have parents that are involved and they've learned languages and things like that. So they do feel some pressure. They always trade their scores with each other.
Right.
It's a little bit of pressure.
I took the ACT four times in high school because I was so stressed out about getting into BYU. But it was never pressure put on me by our parents.
Uh-huh.
It was all self-imposed. Like, I had just seen my older siblings go to BYU. I'd seen you go to BYU. Yeah. And I just thought it looked like such a fun place to go. And still to this day, I don't know how I got in. I think some strings might have been pulled. I cannot confirm this.
So are you willing to share your ACT score?
Sure. So first time, 21.
Uh-huh.
Second time, 21. Third time, 22. And I think fourth time, 25. I eventually got it up to a 25.
Oh, so what did you do to get, I mean, that's a big jump between 21 and 25.
I don't know. I'm just not a good test taker. So I think it was just, I've always been a horrible test taker. I'm amazed that I survived at BYU. Yeah. I barely survived at BYU.
Well, you know, here's the difference, I think. Here's kind of an interesting difference between the BYU of the 80s, because you started BYU in the 90s.
Yeah, I started in 97.
And I started BYU in 86. And so here's the difference just in that span of 11 years in terms of admission to BYU and test taking is in the 80s, there were no test preps. You didn't take a course. You didn't read a book. You didn't do practice tests. You just showed up on Saturday morning with your number two pencil and took the test. So I took the test and I got a 21 on it. And I think I had maybe a 3.7, 3.9, 3.8 somewhere coming out of high school. Boom, I was into BYU like that. That would never happen these days. My application would be found in the circular basket.
Well, and even from 97 to now, I had no AP classes on my record. A lot of my friends that got into BYU had AP classes, but don't you think now that's just a requirement?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Like, you must have AP. You must have an amazing ACT score.
I think it is.
It's a lot of pressure.
I think it is hyper competitive to get in there. And honestly, I think maybe that's one of the reasons that my children don't have aspirations to go to BYU is I think they just don't want to deal with that hyper competitiveness. They'd rather go somewhere else, and not that they're slackers, because they're not. They're taking concurrent credit and AP classes and things like that. And I won't divulge their ACT scores because they might get mad at me, but they did well, you know? So anyway, interesting.
Okay, let's move on.
Okay.
Let's see. Oh, the next one. I've got the next article. This was just an article in the Daily Herald about modest fashion in Utah. Just kind of talking about how Utah's the hub of modest fashion because of the market there, that some of these stores now have been open for many years. There's the big one in Utah County, I know, is that Elise's Bridal.
Which they just do, obviously, bridal and... bridesmaids dresses and things like that. They don't do the everyday fashion.
Formal dresses. Then there's another one that I think it's been open about 10 years now called Mika Rose. And I remember this one. This was one of the very first ones, I believe, when kind of the boom started with internet clothing and modest clothing. Because I remember this one being early on, and I remember my sister-in-law, who was young and cute and in high school and living in California, would order cute things from the site when she needed a dress for a dance. They mostly do dresses. I don't think they do pants. But they're still going strong. And then this wasn't in the article, but it's just been amazing for me to think about the past probably 10 years, what a boom it has been online with clothing.
Absolutely.
Like, people just buy clothes online now, and there's so many that have sprung up that are out of Utah.
Exactly.
That are not 100% like totally Mormon standard modest, but a lot of their things are modest. But they sell nationwide, and tons of people like them, even people that are not LDS. Yeah. The one that I see all the time is Jane.
Yes.
An online boutique. They have cute things.
And you've ordered stuff from Jane before, haven't
I've ordered
you?
I've stuff from Jane before. They have some cute stuff. There's one called Mindy May's Market.
And even as we speak, she's wearing a hoodie from Mindy May.
They have these amazing hoodies.
What do they call it? They have a name for it. It's like
a double hoodie,
and it's got a zipper on the right hand side.
A double hood,
and I think they are so cute, and they look adorable, and I really want one, but I'm waiting for them to go on sale because their regular price is like $55.
They are not cheap. You have to wait for a sale.
Yes.
So,
well, and my teenage girls, Lauren, well, both Lauren and Shelby, they both like this store called to Surf. And they're big online, but they also, I know, have at least one location because they're in the Riverwoods. Oh. Lauren drug me into their Riverwoods store in Provo. But their clothing is adorable.
So is it surfer style, California
style?
No.
You would think with that name that it's surfer style, but it's not. It's just cute clothing. And, you know, not all of it is modest, but a lot of it is modest. And it's adorable. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you the funniest story, though, this summer. Lauren ordered a dress that she was absolutely in love with. First Sunday, she wears it to church. We have a guest in our ward, and it's it's the daughter of a mom. And this this lady, the guest, is probably, I don't know, mid-20s or so. She's wearing the same dress as Lauren. Lauren is absolutely mortified because she thinks she's going to go to church and be the only one in this dress. Not only is she mortified that someone else is wearing it, she's mortified that it's like in her mind, an old woman who's wearing
it. The old 24-year-old. Oh, my goodness. Oh, teenager problems.
So that is the risk that you run. If you shop at these, you know, kind of Mormonish boutiques, is you will show up at church and everybody else will have the same dress.
That is true. That's the risk you run. But it is very convenient. Very
nice. For the most part, I think they've been really reasonably priced. Mm-hmm. We got on call to Surf to order Lauren's homecoming dress. And I said, you know, order something you can wear to church. And so she ordered kind of this white linen dress that had the tulip sleeves with this little band of checkered blue on the bottom. Right. And I think it was $38.
Okay,
so
it's not bad.
No, not bad at all.
Okay. Isn't it so nice for dances? Moms everywhere are like so relieved. Gone are the days where you have to sew your own dress or
Or figure out how to alter one.
Put a white t-shirt on.
Put a white t-shirt underneath. Yeah, exactly. No, and even with super formal stuff, there's so much stuff online. I've ordered a couple of, you know, when Shelby's been asked to prom, formal dresses that we've been able to find online that, you know, feel comfortable.
Right.
And I've never had the standard with my girls, oh, this is what you have to wear.
Right.
My girls just know what they feel comfortable in. And so I let them order, you know, what do you feel comfortable in? And so, you know, they gravitate to things they naturally feel comfortable
in. Right, right. Okay, what's next?
Oh, this is a fun one. This is LDS hymns.
We like this one.
We like this one. So there was an article in the Salt Lake Tribune, and it's been 32 years since the church updated the hymnal. So they updated the hymnal in 1985. And so when they updated that hymnal in 1985, I was 17.
I remember this. I was a young child, and I remember looking at those pretty olive green books in the pews, and being fascinated.
I can't believe you remember that. You were only like 6 years old.
I know, but our mom brought no toys to church. So all you had to do, your only option was to look at the pretty olive green book.
True. So see, I grew up with the smaller sized Navy book that had the little tabernacle raised on it. And so my favorite thing to do in church was to take a pencil with a piece of paper and rub it over the little tabernacle that was raised. So, but I very obviously distinctly remember the 1985 hymnal coming out. Mm-hmm. So that was 32 years ago. There have been a lot of people clamoring, saying, hey, are we going to get a new hymnal? It's been a while. However, right now the church has no plans for a new hymnal because apparently they're still trying to take the 1985 hymnal and get it translated into other languages. And there are still members in foreign countries who are still waiting for a standardized hymn resource in their own language.
That's fascinating. I had no idea. I just assumed they had them all.
I just assumed, you know, you put the hymn in a computer, it would spit it out in Croatian or whatever. Anyway, but apparently that does not stop us English speakers from still dreaming on about what hymns we should take out and what hymns we should put in.
Yes.
And this is a great discussion. So
it's very heated. People are very passionate about this.
People are very passionate about this. So apparently the Salt Lake Tribune had put a query on their Facebook, and it drew nearly 700 responses. And This Week in Mormons linked the Salt Lake Tribune article to their Facebook and drew a number of responses too. We're going to talk about the Salt Lake Tribune's responses first, and then we will get to Twim Nation's responses.
Yes.
So the overwhelming favorite that people wanted to see added back in that was mentioned nearly 100 times, and this was mentioned a lot on the Twim Facebook page, was Come Thou Font of Every Blessing.
Yep.
And what's really interesting is it was included in the little Navy hymn book, which I think came out in 1947, 1946. And so it was a hymn I grew up singing.
So you remember singing it in church?
Well, yes and no, because I grew up singing it in church. But then when the 1985 hymnal came out, I didn't realize that it had really been taken out. And it was about 12 or 13 years later, I was in a music store with Rick, my first husband. And Rick was in there looking at organs because he is a very musical type of person. So he's in there looking at organs, and the organist starts playing Come Thou Font. And this is probably the late 80s. And I'm thinking, I pause and I think to myself, I know that hymn. I haven't heard that hymn in years. You know, it just dawned on me that I hadn't heard it in so long. And I was asking the organist about it. And he said, oh, yes, they removed that from the hymnal. And I think it's really gotten a revision with Mack Wilberg. And especially since he came to the choir. He first arranged it and BYU sang it, I believe, in 1994. In fact, it was the university choir singers, and it was their grand finale, his version of Come Thou Font of Every Blessing, and it aired apparently on PBS. But I think it's got wider coverage. The Mormon Tabernacle Choir has done it several times. So people really like that one, and they want that one. In fact, I thought this was really funny. Some of the comments said, it's apparently hymn number 70 in the old blue book from the 1948 hymnal. And apparently people are not above copying it out of the 1948 hymnal and pasting it inside the green hymn book.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious.
Oh, people have gone rogue. I would do that. I love that song. Let's do it.
Do you think anybody would notice? It says Facebook commentators, several Facebook commentators confessed that they or others in their congregation have copied the music and pasted it into the books at their meeting house.
Oh my goodness. I love it.
I love it too. And then of course there was a lot of people saying Amazing Grace.
Yes. I love that one. I'm on board. I would put that one in.
I would put that one in. And then there's of course hymns that you would take out.
Oh, can we take out all the ones we don't know? Now, I know that like real music people hate this.
Yes.
Like musical people want to learn all those hymns because they say they're great and they're fabulous. We're not like super musical people.
No, we are not musical at all.
So my standard when it comes to singing hymns in church is, do people know it enough that the whole congregation could be singing?
Yes.
If they don't, it needs to be gone.
I completely agree. And you know, it seems like there's always this, how do I want to push and shove? Uh-huh. You know, you get a chorister who is usually a very musical person and they want everybody to learn these obscure hymns. And then you get like your bishop or your stake president who is like, I want to hear people sing.
Right.
And our stake president has specifically said in leadership meetings, I want to hear the saints sing. Sing hymns we know. I don't want to go to sacrament meeting and be singing some hymn I don't know. Sing the ones we know. Sing the ones we like.
I like it. Yeah.
So then that brings the question of, you know, where do you sing the obscure ones? And several people commented, join the ward choir. They always sing weird music in ward choir.
That's so true.
You can learn all the weird ones in ward choir.
Very true. That's the proper place.
Okay.
If you ask me.
Exactly.
Okay. We have to read some of these comments.
Okay. Yes. So there was someone, this again is on the Tribune's Facebook responses, who said, on the flip side, a popular internet exercise among Mormons is a hymn auction. And I had never heard of this before, in which responders share which songs they'd gladly pay money to banish for a year. Now, this is funny. Top targets, Utah-centric hymns about mountains and pioneers, such as O Ye Mountains High, which I really like, O Ye Mountains High, in our lovely Deseret.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to confess. I have a warm and fuzzy feeling about In Our Lovely Deseret.
Oh, you do?
Well, I don't know if you were born or you were just a baby when this happened. I was part of a stake production of a play about Aurelia Rogers, who founded the primary. And I know this is going to be hard for you to believe. I played a snotty little bratty little girl who gets called out of primary for her behavior.
Oh my.
I know. And so we are singing in primary In Our Lovely Deseret. So whenever I hear In Our Lovely Deseret, I think of that play.
You have fond memories.
I have fond memories.
Interesting.
And then people respond, the cheery hymns formerly sung in Sunday school, such as Scatter Sunshine and Welcome, Welcome, Sabbath Morning. Or, as my ex-husband Rick liked to call them, the beer hall songs.
The beer hall songs. Oh, my goodness.
You know, put your shoulder to the wheel, scatter sunshine, all of these. He said, can't you just imagine everybody sitting around in a beer hall with their mugs, chugging along, singing this? Because the tune is really kind of like that.
Oh, that's so funny.
Well, and what's interesting is apparently these beer hall songs were never really intended for sacrament meeting use. Apparently, they were intended to be sung in Sunday school.
Oh.
Which is not as reverent.
Which we don't sing in Sunday school anymore.
We don't sing in Sunday school anymore.
Oh, well, then they got to go.
They got to go. This would have been the days before the block meeting when we had Sunday school in the morning. And Sunday school is obviously not nearly as reverent as sacrament meeting should be. So, yeah, they got to go.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so before we conclude this, we have to address some of the comments and give some shout-outs to what we heard, what some of the people wrote on the Facebook page.
On the TWIM Facebook page.
This is the TWIM Facebook page.
The TWIM listeners were cracking us up.
Oh, yes, they were. So our first shout-out goes to Rachel E.K. Mitchell. This is the song she wants to hear. removed from the book. Lord, dismiss us with thy blessing, because it's go tell Aunt Rhody. And most of the Sunshine Hymns, and also the ones where the men's are singing their own thing under everyone else.
Yes!
Scatter Sunshine fits into both these categories. Ugh, I hate this one. And then she says, and I wish they'd add Come Thou Font back in and put in Amazing Grace too.
Yes.
So shout out to Rachel.
We agree. And I never even noticed until she said that it's the same tune as Because It's her Go Tell Aunt Rhody.
It's really true. I never even noticed that.
Did you notice that?
No, I never did.
I'm never going to be able to sing that song again without laughing.
I'm going to be cracking up. Maybe I better go find the words for Go Tell Aunt Rhody. And when we sing it in church, I'll just sing those words. Okay, some other comments. We have Christopher Randall Nelson, who says, Will You Be There by Michael Jackson.
He wants that to be added in. Apparently there's Michael Jackson fans, because also Mark Roy said, We Are the World by Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie.
Yes. Now, I'm not going to say that these are wonderful songs and the message in them is great, but I'm kind of guessing they're not going to make it past correlation.
Definitely not.
And there's probably a number of reasons for that. All right. And then we had Peter Farron, who said, How about Blasphemous Rumors by Depeche Mode? Now, I thought that was funny because
people are clever.
Let's face it, there are a lot of blasphemous rumors that float around the church. So shouldn't we have a song entitled Blasphemous Rumors?
Yeah.
Maybe not the Depeche Mode version. And then Micah Mills Hall says, Remove collab. There's no end to how long that song is.
Yes. So true.
So true. And then this was really funny. This was John McFerrin. When I was most recently ward music director, I scheduled There Is Sunshine in My Soul Today exactly once. In January, when it was 7 degrees, cloudy and snowy. Otherwise, I have no use for that and the other sunshine hymns. Now that's funny.
That's really good.
That is really good.
I like his sense of humor.
I do too. Shout out to John McFerrin. Okay,
that's the hymn discussion. Oh, so good. We'll be anxiously waiting for the new version, which will come out someday.
Apparently not anytime soon.
Yeah.
So for those of you Come Thou Font fans and Amazing Grace fans, you're just going to have to cut and paste it into your book.
That's right. Okay, our last story we have today, this is one I just happened upon this morning because I was watching the Today Show, and Matt Lauer and Savannah Guthrie were talking about a study done by Brigham Young University. And the study says that when you deliver bad news, you should not beat around the bush. You should get right to it, particularly when you are breaking up with someone.
Well, nobody would know that better than BYU students.
I know. So funny. So it just a study done by a BYU linguistics professor, Alan Manning, found that especially in a social relationship, you should not try to say nice things, not try to smooth it over. If you're such a great person, you should just get right to it.
It's not you, it's me.
Yeah.
Let's face it, if you're breaking up with them, it isn't you, it's them.
That's right. So they did say an immediate I'm breaking up with you might be too direct, but all you need is we need to talk. He said that's enough of a buffer, and then after that you can go right into it.
So, we need to talk. This doesn't work for me. Sorry.
I know. So funny. I just thought it was funny. And I thought, you know, this is very good information that I could have used in my 20s. Because one time it took me from Thanksgiving to Christmas to break up with a boy.
Oh, dear.
Thanksgiving break to Christmas break. It just wasn't taking.
As in he wasn't getting the message or your delivery wasn't clear enough?
Both.
Well, apparently you must have finally gotten some clarity. Yes. Because you did not marry him.
Yes, although I've been on the other end where I have been broken up with abruptly.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say I do appreciate it now that it's over.
Yes.
Not at the time. Did I ever tell you my bloody nose story?
No.
My breakup with the bloody nose?
No.
Ever told you this story?
No.
Okay, my freshman year, my boyfriend who is still back at home in Idaho.
Oh, this was David.
Yeah, this was David.
Okay, yes, I do remember David.
Called me on the phone in my dorm to break up with me, and he got right to it. He was all business, but the crazy thing was, like, the second that he said it over the phone line, my nose started bleeding, like, gushing bloody nose, and I started bawling. So I was a mess.
So you've got snot, blood, and tears.
Like hysterical sobbing, tears, blood coming out of my nose. I'm in the hall of my dorm at Heritage Halls.
Because they didn't have phones in apartments.
Yeah, we didn't have cell phones. It was like the phone that me and all my roommates used. So my roommates are all watching me in the hallway bleeding and crying, and they're just freaking out, thinking that somebody died. It was so awkward. I remember telling him on the phone, I have to go, I have a bloody nose. And then when I get off the phone and tell my roommates, oh, he just broke up with me, I think they were a little relieved because I really think that they thought somebody died.
No, I don't know how I missed the bloody nose story.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Great. Although, he got right to it. That's the way it should be done.
Minus the bloody nose.
Yeah.
Okay. We are getting to the end. Shall we discuss our favorite things?
Oh, yes. Let's do favorite things.
Okay. I'm going to let you start.
Okay. My favorite thing this week is a podcast that I absolutely adore. I cannot rave about this podcast enough.
Okay.
It is called The Presidential Podcast.
Oh, I have listened to this.
You've listened to some, right?
Yes, because you told me to.
Yeah. So it's done by the Washington Post, a reporter there named Lillian Cunningham. So she actually did it a year ago, and she started during the presidential election. And there are 44 episodes, one for every president leading up to Trump. And she did it weekly, and she took an hour of podcast to talk about each president's life. And so interesting. She's just a great storyteller. There are so many presidents that I really didn't know much about. And she just really does a great job of putting it in perspective as to what was their stamp on the overall picture of the United States and why things are the way they are today, how these presidents have affected us. So good. And she has a new one that I also have to plug because this is what I'm listening to right now.
Okay. I didn't know she had a new one.
She has another one. It just came out this summer, and it's called Constitutional. And very similar format, but she's taking the Constitution and talking about each week. She only puts this one out every other week.
Okay.
But she talks about a different aspect of the Constitution. First, she kind of talks about how it's set up and the framework.
Oh.
And then each week she talks about different, how it's been tweaked and the amendments and the cases and the laws. You would love this.
Oh, I would love this.
It's all legal stuff.
Oh, yes.
And all kinds of information about how we, how we got the right to fair trials and the gender issues and the racial issues. And so each week she focuses on a different little aspect of the Constitution and how that got tweaked or amended.
Yeah.
So it's so interesting. Really, really fabulous podcast.
Oh, I'm going to have to go find that. You know, as you were talking about this, I just thought this would be really good if you were taking a road trip with your kids. I mean, your kids maybe need to be a little bit older, but if you could get them to unplug from their devices, this would be, I've listened to her podcast and they are fascinating.
Right.
It would be a really good, interesting to listen to in the car. Plus, it goes along the lines with ACT Mom,
who says,
expose your kids to all sorts of different things and educational ideas.
There you go.
So
perfect. What's yours?
Okay, so my favorite this week is thrift stores.
Oh.
And here's why my favorite this week is thrift stores. First of all, on Friday night, your daughter Callie came to my house to spend the night with my daughter Katie. Mm-hmm. Both of these are little 10-year-old girls. And so one of the things that was on our list to do was to go to some thrift stores, or as my teenage boys like to say, poppin' tags, which I think comes from some rap song.
It's a song, yep.
Okay. Anyway, so we went to thrift stores because they each needed some articles for their Halloween costumes. Katie is going to be the Mad Hatter, and Callie, of course, is going to be Hermione Granger.
Yes.
So then on Saturday, I went to the thrift store to drop off several bags. Mm. I had about 6 bags that had accumulated in my garage. So
it comes full circle.
It comes full circle. I purchased some stuff on Friday. I gave some stuff back on Saturday. But then my teenage boys on Saturday also went to the thrift store because they decided they wanted to go hit golf balls. So they found some drivers that I think cost them $2 or $3 at the thrift store, bought the drivers, went out to the golf range, had a great afternoon hitting golf balls. balls with their DI golf clubs.
Fabulous. And there are a plethora of thrift stores here in Boise.
There really are. Oh, yes.
You have Goodwill, you have DI, you have Idaho Youth. There's a lot.
There's a lot.
Quite the variety.
Quite the variety. So that's my plug this week is thrift store shopping. You can find all sorts of fun things there, but be sure and give back as well.
Yes, very good. All right, I like it.
All right, well, that concludes our show. A couple of different things before we end. We want to remind you that we have the Twin Sisters Instagram account. So if you haven't had a chance to follow us on Instagram, you can just plug in Twim, T-W-I-M, Sisters, and it will come up. Mm-hmm. There's also the regular Instagram account for Twim. You can follow Twim on Twitter. You can also follow him on Facebook. And then, of course, there's thisweekinmormons.com. And we do want to remind you all about Patreon. Patreon is a monthly subscription. You can agree to pay $1 a month that comes directly out of your checking account or on your credit card, however you want to do that, to help just support the podcast and keeping us on the air. So please visit patreon.com/thisweekinmormons and make a contribution. The last thing, we want to figure out how to close out our podcast. Jeff and Al always say, be well, be holy, be happy.
Yeah, we need a closing.
We need a closing thing. And we are kind of tapped out on our creativity.
Plus, we've had so much fun reading all of your hilarious comments on the Facebook page that we think that you guys could do a better job than we could.
So when this episode gets published and gets linked on the Facebook page, we want y'all to go on and give us suggestions for what we should say each time we do a podcast and how we should close it out.
Yeah, we need some help. What should be our closing?
We
believe the clever Twim Nation people can come up with something amazing.
All right. So help some girls out.
All right.
Until next time.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
It's over!